It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today, we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including Phoenix Planning Commission okays data center restrictions. Ice cream franchise picks Ahwatukee for shop. Arizona ostrich rancher makes flock available for research. Phoenix launches safety effort on e-bikes and scooters. And safety in Phoenix's urban parks scrutinized. Our first article from the Ahwatukee Foothills News. Phoenix Planning Commission okays data center restrictions by AFN News staff. The Phoenix Planning Commission last week recommended that City Council adopt tighter zoning restrictions on the development of data centers within city boundaries. The move comes amid concerns about the proliferation of data centers across the valley and their substantial consumption of land, water, and electricity while providing few jobs. Data centers have sprung up like wildflowers across the country in response to the growth of artificial intelligence. AI is driving a significant increase in their size and energy consumption to handle workloads. City planning staff said its proposed general plan amendment zoning code changes would provide policy guidance for data centers, addressing the major concerns they pose to the community and to the city. Last December, Deputy City Manager Alan Stevenson said tighter control over data centers was needed to protect quality of life in Phoenix. The commission endorsed the City Planning and Development staff report that defines data centers as facilities used primarily for the storage, processing, management, and transmission of digital data. A facility shall not be considered a data center when it does not exceed 10% of the gross floor area of all on-site buildings, is used to serve the enterprise functions of the on-site property owner, and is not used to lease data services to third parties, the proposed measure states. The zoning code changes detail the look of the facilities, their positioning on a site, and areas where they can be built. Preliminary site plan approval will not be granted for a data center until such time that a local utility company confirms in writing with a will serve letter that it can serve the energy demand within 2 years for the proposed data center, it says. It also bans construction of data centers within 300 feet of a residential area if the existing ambient noise is higher than normal ambient noise for most any development. To ensure noise levels are relatively low, a developer will have to submit to the city a third-party acoustical engineer's documentation of baseline noise levels in the area. It also would ban data centers within 2,640 feet of an existing high-capacity transit station. Data centers are very large in scale and do not provide the type of scale and mix of uses desired for transit-oriented communities, city planners said in a memo. By keeping them away from high-capacity transit stations, where mixed-use, walkable communities are envisioned for transit-oriented communities, the measure protects them from incompatible facilities. Stevenson last year said, any land within these centers and the village cores should be focused on creating a significant number of jobs or housing units. Any land uses within these areas that don't create significant jobs or significant housing units is creating a negative impact because the use does not take advantage of public taxpayer infrastructure investments that are planned and likely built for much more intense land uses. By keeping them away from high-capacity transit stations where mixed-use, walkable communities are envisioned, the measure protects them from incompatible facilities. A report by a global investment management and professional services company said the market share of new and planned existing data centers in the Phoenix metro region has grown by over 245% since 2019. Existing data centers in the valley consume an estimated 2,000 megawatts of electricity, Colliers said. The new data centers already approved for construction will consume an additional total of 3,000 megawatts once they're in operation, it added. Small data centers with 5,000 to 20,000 square feet might use 1 to 5 megawatts a day, while hyperscale facilities can consume 20 to over 100 megawatts. A megawatt can supply the electric power needs of 400 to 900 homes for a year. Noting the increased frequency and development of these types of facilities, city planning and development staff said, "One major concern with data centers is that their energy demand is expected to increase significantly, in large part due to artificial intelligence." Another major concern is the scale at which these types of facilities are built and how they can negatively affect the surrounding community they are built in. Mayor Kate Gallego last month called on the legislature to terminate tax incentives for companies that invest at least $50 million in data centers in Pima and Maricopa counties, or $25 million in the other counties. The state still incentivizes new data centers, a holdover from a time before our economy was in the magnet for job growth that it is today, Gallego said in her annual State of the City address. "I think it's safe to say these tax breaks are no longer necessary. To ensure our precious resources are used to the highest benefit and value for our residents, state lawmakers must roll back this antiquated incentive." To prevent the warehouse monolith look of data centers, the city measure said the buildings should include enhanced architectural design features in order to provide visual interest, to break up the mass of the building structure, and to provide an enhanced design interface where visible from a right-of-way and/or residentially zoned property. It also requires a 30-foot-wide landscape perimeter with shade trees and ground cover. Noting, an enhanced landscape setback with a dense number of trees and shrubs helps to mitigate negative visual impacts. Along with requiring that all wires and transmission lines be buried, the measure requires a minimum 60-foot-wide detached sidewalk separated from the curb by a 3-foot-wide landscape strip. An enhanced streetscape helps to soften the edge of the development of a larger non-residential use, planners noted. It is unclear when the measure will go before City Council for adoption, although the measure could come up before it breaks for the summer. That was Phoenix Planning Commission OK's data center restrictions. Our next article, Ice Cream Franchise Picks Ahwatukee for Shop, also by AFN News staff. Holly Strabeck started a cool Gilbert business about 2 months ago, and now she's ready to start a second in Ahwatukee. She's opening Stella's Ice Cream Ahwatukee at 4901 East Ray Road, to sell old-school ice cream where it was made in a batch freezer. To celebrate the opening, she held a celebration on Saturday, June 14th, that included free pints of ice cream for the first 100 customers, all-day raffles and giveaways, surprise visits by Princess Moana and Belle, and face painting. Her husband, Evan, adding, "My wife and I will be manning the store full-time. My wife is the brains of the operation. I'm merely her chauffeur." Added Holly, "We're proud to offer handcrafted old-school ice cream made the traditional way, as well as homemade cookies, brownies, cakes, and a wide variety of cones, including a gluten-free and dairy-free option. We're proud to be a veteran-owned business and local members of the community." Stella's also is making its Ahwatukee arrival by debuting some exclusive, limited-time flavors for opening week. "And trust us, you'll want to be first in line," the Strabeck said on Instagram. Evan also is his wife's spokesman, and he was too busy making ice cream, which he promised has no nitrogen infusion or sexy dots or shaved ice, just traditional ice cream from a local dairy farm. The store also offers homemade cookies, brownies, cakes, and a variety of cones that pair nicely with the ice cream, he said. The Gilbert store was the couple's first location for Stella's, which was founded by the couple in Idaho in 2018. Evan, a recently retired Navy officer, and his wife have lived in Gilbert for 3 years. "We were stationed here on military orders," he said. Holly is strategy consultant for a management consulting firm. In some ways, it was destiny that brought Stella's and the Strabecks together. "My wife and I met over ice cream as a first date and were always traveling to compare flavors at shops," he said, echoing the franchise founders who said that before they had children, they traveled miles around Idaho for the best desserts. Evan added that when he was undergoing chemotherapy after a cancer diagnosis in 2022, ice cream was one of the only food items I could eat as a treat to help keep my weight up to receive the treatment needed. It's always been part of our relationship, he said of ice cream. My wife is an entrepreneur at heart, and when the idea of bringing traditional ice cream to Gilbert with a new look, she jumped right in to make this dream a reality. Stella's Ice Cream Gilbert partners with a dairy farm that produces its proprietary dairy mix that the Strabecks use to produce their ice cream. Every batch is made fresh, Evan said. This helps us ensure the ice cream we serve is always fresh and makes for the best product. We also love partnering with local farmers and small business owners whenever we can. Is the process a little arduous and more difficult? Absolutely, he added. However, it is very much worth it. The couple have been working on their store for well over a month as they took it from a shell to a brightly colored venue. But, Evan said, my personal greatest challenge in this endeavor has been learning to remain flexible. Every day brings a new set of challenges. Leaning into these challenges and realizing they present an opportunity to find a solution and a way forward is a mindset that I wish I could have adjusted to sooner. As my wife always tells me, everything is figure-outable. In the competitive environment spawned by ice cream, Evan added, I think our commitment to do the common uncommonly well is what sets us apart. We believe ice cream shouldn't be just a treat. It should be an experience, he said. It's a time for the family to come together for a special outing, whether it's after a baseball game, family event, or even just a long week at work or school. Ice cream is for everyone, every day. We look forward to the opportunity to bring smiles to those in our community. That was Ice Cream Franchise Picks Ahwatukee for Shop. Our next article, Arizona Ostrich Rancher Makes Flock Available for Research, by Janelle Maloney. Damon D.C. Cogburn of the world-famous roadside attraction at Picacho Peak is making his flock of ostriches available for the medical field, stating ostrich antibodies have the potential to cure an infinite number of diseases. Proof for the bird breeder's claim has been found in numerous publicly accessible laboratory studies conducted in Japan and Iran. During the COVID pandemic, one veterinary doctor, Dr. Yashiro Tashimako, used ostriches to formulate antibodies that responded to the deadly flu virus that claimed nearly 1.3 million lives. In Iran, scientists affiliated with the Pasteur Institute Medical Research Center in Tehran repeated the same process with ostriches to create antibodies that target the autoantigen causing type 1 diabetes. Further studies have used the process to create a working cure for genetic hair loss, irritable bowel syndrome, allergies, staph infections, bronchitis, and acne. Cogburn summed up the stat saying, "This is serious stuff that would solve a lot of problems." As the current owner of the largest flock of domesticated ostriches in the world outside of South Africa, Cogburn said he is determined to be part of the solution by inviting investors, researchers, and universities to partner with him to create a commercial research ranch near him, the first of its kind. He has over 600 hens available that produce thousands of eggs every year, the secret ingredient to the medical discovery. Ostrich immune systems are highly effective at producing antibodies, protein molecules that work for the immune system using the original pathogen markers. After immunizing a hen, a completely harmless process just like any human receiving a flu shot, her eggs will carry those antibodies, then can be retrieved from the infertile eggs, isolated and repackaged into a lozenge, cream, injectable, or serum. The antibodies can even be specified to target tumor markers in cancer patients. If only the state of Arizona realized what was possible, he stated, adding that he wants to make sure he does his part for the betterment of man. Man, what a thrill it'd be, he said. While the possibilities for cures are endless, the time to act is now. D.C. Cogburn is seeking an immediate move forward. He believes that at the age of 86, and with what is happening in the ostrich industry, the country is running out of options. For example, A recent government order has demanded a Canadian ostrich farm to destroy its entire flock. It's time to develop the cures here, Cogburn urged. As long as they allow his family to continue being the master caretakers for the birds, he has clarified. Ostriches have been a notable part of Arizona's history and character for over a century, and with this opportunity, they may become some of the most important birds on Earth. That was Arizona Ostrich Rancher Makes Flock Available for Research. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Did you know that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org? Then, click on the link for broadcast info and audio. Today, we're focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on. Phoenix launches safety effort on e-bikes and scooters, by Paul Mariniak. The growing popularity of electric bicycles and scooters is prompting Phoenix police to ramp up a program that educates riders on their legal responsibilities while curbing violations in a balanced way. During an appearance before City Council's Public Safety and Justice Subcommittee, police officials last week rolled out an integrated plan focused on education, outreach, and balanced enforcement to mitigate risks and promote responsible use. A 45-day period of educating the public on laws governing the three basic types of electric scooters and e-bikes began June 5th, and after that, police will be targeting certain areas of the city where complaints have been generated about nuisance e-bikes and e-scooters, according to Mountain View Precinct Commander Leif Myers. However, in a response to a question from Councilman Tom Waring, Myers stressed, "We've educated more than we're enforcing on these, and it's only if a call is generated, and unless there's a specific crime suppression program dedicated to that certain area." He also said, currently, we're citing very, very few e-bike and e-scooter riders for violation of city ordinances and state laws. A patchwork of different ordinances and laws govern different types of e-scooters and e-bikes, according to Myers. For example, there are three different types of e-bikes. A Class 1, in which a bike has fully functional pedals and the motor only assists when the rider is pedaling. Class 2 bikes have functional pedals and a throttle, so the rider can rely just on the motor. Class 3 is an enhanced Class 1, where the motor only assists when the rider is pedaling, but the bike can reach speeds of 28 miles per hour. The top speed for the other two classes is 20 miles per hour. The e-bikes are not governed by state DUI laws or those commonly applied to conventional vehicles, so they do not require insurance, registration, or a driver's license. However, Myers noted, the minimum age for operating an e-bike is 16, and they are prohibited on sidewalks. E-scooters are also treated like e-bikes, so no registration, insurance, or license is required to operate one. If operating at night, city code requires a white light or a red reflector, and an e-scooter operator must be at least 16 years old. They also are banned from sidewalks. The most controversial are motor-powered bicycles. They are considered motorcycles, Myers said, and hence require an operator's license, insurance, and registration if they are operated on public roadways. Those requirements do not apply if they are used only on private property, although DUI and reckless driving laws apply wherever they're used. They are differentiated from e-bikes by pegs that are located where pedals might normally be situated. Operators of all electric bicycles who are under 18 must wear helmets, and all traffic laws apply for all operators regardless of their age, Myers added. While he said he has received numerous complaints about the use of e-scooters and e-bikes in parks, washes, and other areas, Waring expressed some skepticism about the department's ability to monitor the vehicles when the city has only about 35 to 45 officers to patrol 5,000 miles of city streets. With something like this, you're also patrolling parks and washes, and it's not just realistic to have officers camped out at these spots waiting for kids to come along, said Waring, whose district has seen the city's only fatality from a collision between an e-bike and an e-scooter. We understand that all parents and riders may not understand these rules and regulations that govern each platform, and therefore will lead with an education and outreach approach prior to enforcement, Meyer said. We feel this multi-layered outreach approach will provide the community with opportunities to become familiar with these laws that pertain to each platform, he continued. The overall goal really is to provide a better understanding of all three, enhance safety, and reduce community issues and concerns. That prompted Vice Mayor Ann O'Brien to suggest that the police department ask school districts for help in its public education efforts. I have neighborhoods that are having huge problems with this, and I appreciate all the work that the police department and I believe our parks department has also helped us do, to try to do some education out there. She said she was the only council member who advocated to lower the operating age to 16 from 18 because it would help young people who have a part-time job or attend different schools for different programs during the day. The new campaign wasn't greeted with much enthusiasm by Jeff Rosen, manager of the Stone Creek Golf Course on East Paradise Village Parkway. We've consistently dealt with kids on e-bikes trespassing on our course, Rosen told the committee. However, over the past 3 months, this activity has increased exponentially, and in response, we've significantly increased our on-course presence until sunset each day. This is now needed for normal operations, not only to protect our golf course, but also to safeguard our paying guests and those using the Indian Bend Trail. He said the expense of such vigilance is becoming unsustainable. We're incurring extra payroll expenses, investing labor and materials to repair turf damage, and refunding customers whose experiences are disrupted, Rosen said, adding, compounding this is the rise in negative online reviews, which harm our reputation and discourage future guests from visiting. I understand the importance of public education, but I must question why the timeline of these regulations. They've been in place for nearly 2 years, and unfortunately, the education time has passed, and I would like to vouch for enforcement taking priority. That was Phoenix Launches Safety Effort on E-Bikes and Scooters. And finally, safety in Phoenix's urban parks scrutinized, also by Paul Mariniak. With 188 urban parks comprising 10,000 acres in Phoenix, protecting visitors from harm and harassment is more than daunting, especially since a typical day sees only 3 pairs of rangers and a supervisor patrolling them on each of 3 daily shifts. Even though those shifts provide 24/7 surveillance, Councilman Tom Waring said, "Honestly, it's not even close to like one person per park at a time." Even if you were camped out right in the middle of a lot of our parks, he said, during a Council Public Safety and Justice Subcommittee hearing June 4th, you might not be able to see activities that are illegal or that we don't want or vandalism because there are so many acres. The subcommittee focused on how well the City Parks and Recreation Department is positioned to keep urban parks safe for families and other visitors. To a large degree, it found sufficient manpower lacking. Waring also found some policies for offenders of the city's rules of conduct too lenient. For example, he called a 1-year ban on visiting a park for someone who brandished a gun woefully inadequate. He called for a lifetime ban. He also criticized the city's treatment of vandals. Though Parks Department Director Cynthia Aguiar and Deputy Director Gerard Rogers said they were willing to discuss more stringent penalties. If you're out there taking a sledgehammer to the monkey bars or whatever, Waring said, we can't have that. That stuff's really expensive, and you might get away with it a lot of the time because we don't have enough people to cover all the parks at any given time. So the whole that we're going to lead with warnings or something doesn't really work for me. We need to be working with enforcement. If you're out damaging our property because it's ours as taxpayers, we make you pay us back. Aguilar stressed that we are leading with enforcement when it comes to vandalizing, but she also said currently we do not penalize through fines. If charges are made, there's a court case involved. There's a process in place where we could recover costs, but only in case of a court case. Waring replied, "That seems lenient to me. Is a lifetime ban out of the question?" Aguilar said it was something the department could discuss, although the rules of conduct are generally promulgated by the Parks and Recreation Board, not City Council. Overall, administration officials said enforcement of those rules of conduct has been significantly beefed up over the last few years, with the number of urban park rangers increasing from 12 in 2018 to a current of 44. In addition, another 60 full-time and 7 part-time rangers are assigned to patrol some 41,000 acres of mountain preserves and 200 trails. 12 inner-city urban parks also are patrolled by a private security force contracted by the Parks Department. An administration memo showed that, with their relatively small number, urban park rangers on average make 72 park visits a day and visit 178 parks a month, making 35 enforcement contacts a night when parks are closed. Last year, urban park rangers made 20,415 education contacts, about 392 a week. They also issued 2,564 orders to trespassers to leave and gave out 343 citations for city code violations. Asked what an education contact involved, Rogers said, "We interact with people that are using the parks in an appropriate manner. Fortunately, that's most of our contacts. Those contacts might involve correcting someone for rolling a ball down a slide or suggesting a family with little kids visit a nearby park with more age-appropriate amenities." The administration also said that as part of the ongoing development of a new parks master plan, 29 urban parks will be assessed for crime prevention strategies through Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design, or CPTED, evaluations. That was Safety in Phoenix's Urban Parks Scrutinized. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.